Hey guys, I don't know if you're like me, but I love Count the Dings and everything it has to offer. I just can't find everything I need. You know, I know about Cinephobe, and I know about the mailbag, and I know about Bomb, but that's all we do, right, Amin?
No, we do so much more.
What?
Yeah, absolutely. If you sign up, patreon.com/countthedings, you'll find a plethora of other content, fresh content, extended content, the OG Pod Overflow, the Cinephobe Cold Opens that we've taken and made their own thing to live only there, the Rewatchingtons, Bomb in its full and unadulterated cut, early drops of Cinephobe episodes, and so much more.
You said the OG Pod. Now, is it new or is it old?
Mace, I'm glad you asked that. It is a new incarnation of the old OG Pod.
Oh.
So it's me, Zach, Trey, Waz, Tom.
I love those guys.
Just like we always were, going back to the True Hoop days, we're recreating that magic, recapturing it, and putting it back out. We're talking hoops, we're talking pop culture, and most importantly, we're talking for 40 minutes for free, but then another specific Patreon exclusive segment for every one of those episodes.
Funny enough about that OG Pod, you're getting Tom and Trey on Mondays, you're getting me and Waz, aka Zosny, on Wednesdays. Amin's floating in between.
I'm a floater.
You never know when you're going to get Amin in those, so you got to listen to them all.
And what if I'm not sure what Maze looks like, because I've always thought he's a fat man with a fedora, he's got a weird voice. How can I see for myself what this Maze character actually looks like?
It's crazy you don't know the answer to this because it's the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page.
What?
The CT5s on the Cinephobe Pod YouTube page. You can look at all of us.
You can get all the OG pods on YouTube too, at Count the Dings 1 on YouTube, at Cinephobe Pod on YouTube. Patreon.com/countthedings gets you everything all in one feed. You can link it to your Spotify. And now enjoy the show.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What up, everybody? I'm Big Waz.
And I'm Nando Vila.
And we are the Woke Bros. Each week, we bring you guys lefty news from a lefty perspective, man. What does that mean? That means news from the perspective of working people like you and I.
Yeah, do you think the Republicans suck? And do you think that the Democrats also suck? Well, you're going to like our show because we think they both suck.
Absolutely. So if you want the news all Skrilla, no filler, each and every Thursday, please subscribe, rate, review wherever you get podcasts, because the Woke Bros has their own individual podcast feed. Make sure you look up the Woke Bros, subscribe to us, rate us, review us, give us 5 stars, and say that we're the greatest of all time. See you guys soon. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the latest edition of the Woke Bros. Of course, I'm your co-host, Big Waz, a.k.a. Wazney Lambre, joined as always by my brother on the West Side. He's feeling pretty good today. Spain won 5-0, advanced past the group stage. Nando Vila, what's going on with you?
It was hairy there for a second. You know, Spain needed to win. They missed the penalty early, and I was like thinking, oh my God. You know, Spain is the first team in the history of the Euro Cup to miss two penalties in the same group stage. No one's ever done that. So congratulations to Spain for that nefarious record. I thought everything was lining up perfectly after Poland got the tying goal against Sweden. That would have been, that would have put Spain on top of the group. And would have put it like in a better side of the tournament, but Sweden won it at the last second, and that means Spain is second. But you know, we're through, so that's good.
Congrats to the Spaniards, to the conquistadors. We wish you the best of luck in next round.
We need it.
On today's show, the number one story in politics today is whether or not the Dems are going to
destroy the filibuster, because otherwise they're literally going to get absolutely nothing done. And Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema continue to be the divas that they are. They just love the attention. Joe Manchin is loving all of this. He loves that he is the center of American politics right now, and he's milking this thing. We're going to get into the latest bullshit of bipartisan ruining our lives, as always. But first, New York, my home state, a place that I love and hold a dear, dear spot in my heart, Nando. Yeah. Had two pretty huge mayoral primaries last night, yesterday. One in Buffalo, where a historic victory for socialist candidate, that's right, I said it, socialist candidate India Walton, who defeated a four-term incumbent out there in Buffalo by a pretty nice margin, by the way. 7 points ain't nothing to sneeze at.
No.
That's a big win, and we'll get to that because we want to end off this segment with some good news. But first, New York City, my hometown, a place that I love, Nando, handed us a turd sandwich by electing.
Well, not quite yet.
Not quite yet, but no Republican's ever going to do this.
Well, but he may not have won.
He may not have won. That's right. The votes haven't all been tallied. They're still mail-in. And New York has this weird tier system now.
Ranked choice voting that no one really understands how it works. And
and nobody asked for, by the way. And so the votes aren't tallied yet, but it's looking like Eric Adams, Brooklyn Borough President, former police lieutenant, it should be said, is going to sail through, Nando. For people who haven't been paying attention to the primary situation in New York City, Eric Adams is heavily backed by the two major interests in New York. We know who they are. The finance bros and, of course, the real estate interests. Those are the people who run shit in New York, right? It used to be the unions who were, they got... They got sullied. Their names have been sullied in public because of mafia ties. But the unions used to get busy. What's a little mafia ties?
Who cares?
I mean, what's the big deal? Racketeering, extortion, murder.
Yeah.
Who cares? But these days, Wall Street and the real estate interests, they make the weather in New York City. That's just the reality of it. And this is their candidate. Make no mistake about it. And he's leading right now. The only progressives that kind of got anything going, look, we don't make light of Me Too here. We don't want to do that. But Scott Stringer, actual progressive cat, his campaign got basically the rug pulled out from underneath it from, you can call it what you want, an accusation that he groped a woman that he used to work with 18 years ago. And
that he used to date.
That he used to date as well. That basically, and look, again, y'all know this ain't the Me Too, the woke show. I'm just saying. 18 years ago, allegedly, this guy groped this woman. And so his campaign got completely tanked by the one accusation from somebody, by the way, who later went on to work for a political rival of his. There's no love lost between these two. Not to say it's y'all could do what y'all want with the credibility, et cetera, et cetera. But his candidacy was tanked after this accusation came out. There were no other real. No, Nando, you mentioned the lady. We had a progressive lady in the race. What was her name?
Well, they had a couple progressive ladies, although progressive is kind of a generous term for some of these. They were kind of
exactly.
They weren't like Bernie-crats. They weren't like, one of them, Maya Wiley, was an MSNBC analyst who spent the entire Democratic primary just bashing Bernie. But she's still kind of in the hunt, after this weird ranked choice thing. And then the other one was Diane Morales, whose campaign collapsed after some staffers accused the campaign of not great work conditions and Islamophobia or something. And then the campaign tried to unionize and which, like, listen, man, no one supports like organized labor more than me and you in the media.
Right.
But like in the context of a political campaign, it's kind of strange. It's like a short term thing. There's like a very concrete goal at the end.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a sprint. You know, for organized labor is for like
this isn't a long term job.
Exactly. Yeah. So and the same thing happened to Cynthia Nixon.
If your candidate loses, like.
Yeah, it doesn't matter, you know, like, yeah. And like the same thing happened to Cynthia Nixon, where like the campaign tried to unionize and like they recognized the union. And then like they spent like the last 2 weeks of the campaign, like negotiating whether like how many days off they were going to get, you know? And it's like, dude, it's the 2 weeks left in the campaign. You gotta win the thing, you know?
Right.
So the two progressive candidates, which were Scott Stringer was the guy who like had a chance at the beginning. He was the city comptroller, very powerful position. You know, he used to be the Manhattan borough president, longtime like New York politics guy. He wasn't like a Bernie-crat or anything like that, but he was like a progressive guy, you know? He got done dirty by a Me Too allegation that I think is like an instructive lesson for everyone involved. Because first of all, like anyone who saw that play out just sees like, okay, now if all I want to do is to take down a left-wing candidate is just find someone to just throw an accusation
and accuse him.
Yeah. Because listen, as soon as he was accused with no evidence, just a woman who, by the way, like worked for his political rivals and things like that, who, by the way, they dated, they were dating, like in the past at the time. The allegation was that he groped her. As soon as that happened, all of the left-wing organizations who had endorsed him abandoned him. The Working Families Party abandoned him. Jamal Bowman, congressman, abandoned him. Julia Salazar, who I know a little bit, retracted her endorsement. So then, of course, his campaign tanked, because that's like, you know, when a progressive loses the endorsement of all the progressive organizations, then they have no hope. He fought the allegation. He showed evidence that, you know, after the supposed, you know, groping, she, you know, tried to get a job with him, and, you know, that they knew each other for like a long time. And then, you know, she didn't get a job with him, that she went to work for his political rival at the time, was Elliot Spitzer. So again, I think we should think long and hard about I think we should think long and hard about how we deal with this kind of thing in the future, because the same thing happened to Alex Morse, who ran against Richie Neal in Massachusetts. We covered that race. He got like a inappropriate sexual allegation, mm-hmm. which turned out to be just utter bullshit. But the same thing, like all the progressive organizations abandoned him and his campaign tanked by the time he like was able to correct the record, it was too late. You know, so it doesn't even matter if the allegation is true or not. The accusation itself will cause the infrastructure of the campaign to collapse. So I think it's an important lesson to sort of keep an eye out for that. Next time a left-wing candidate, you know, same thing happened with that guy Shahid Buttar in San Francisco. Like, just, it's clearly like a tactic that is being used, and it's clearly a tactic that is working, you know? So we got to think long and hard about how we get that tactic to not work anymore. Because now what we got is Eric Adams, you know, most likely he won, you know, Eric Adams, which, man, it has to be said is interesting. I mean, this kid, he was beaten by in a police precinct when he was a teenager, you know, like some cops like beat the shit out of him, when he was a teenager. Then he became a cop, rose through the ranks, got into politics, kind of like was the ultimate insider, and was able to put together a coalition where he cozied up with the real estate interests, like you said, raised a ton of cash. But in terms of voters, working class blacks, working class Latinos, working class whites, the working class of New York supported this man on a platform of expanding the police, you know, which is interesting after, you know, the year that we had in 2020 in the wake of George Floyd and the protests and the defund the police thing. So in a platform of expanding the police in the context of a crime wave in New York and in a bunch of cities in America, it has to be said, but like, I think murders were up like 100%, you know, which,
that's a big
can't
deal.
Be ignored. Yeah.
Yeah.
and you know, he ran on expanding the police and he won working class voters. I mean, it's just like, it's kind of an interesting microcosm of national politics writ large, in which, like, you know, the left kind of killed itself, or was killed by, like, kind of bullshit, you know, the way Bernie was. You know, Bernie was accused of, like, all kinds of sexism, racism throughout his campaign. And, like, people on the left took that shit seriously, which is ridiculous. While the working class of America voted in a guy like Joe Biden, who, like, is just, the guy who did the crime bill.
In corporate cash, did the crime bill, whatever you want to call it. And, you know, I think it's important that we talk about what this guy wants to do, right? Like, he doesn't believe in rent stabilization. Like, all of the stuff that he's basically espoused are of the, you know, who Nando so affectionately terms as the petty bourgeoisie, the landlord class, like the people who already got it going on. And I think it should be said, I think a lot of people don't understand this, that there is a large population of Black homeowners in New York City, specifically in the outer boroughs of Brooklyn and Queens. Like, and these people are pretty freaking conservative. And he very smartly sort of drew a wedge between him and the sort of hoity-toity white liberal elites of Manhattan. And that resonates with people, specifically working class Black, white Latinos in the outer boroughs, right? Like, they call us bridge and tunnel trash, Nando. That's a thing.
That's right.
Okay.
That's what I call you every day.
And so, you know,
bridge your way all the way to fucking LA.
That's right. I think that's savvy politics, to be honest with you, because it taps into something real that people feel, you know, and you can use it as a way to gain support and amass support of people. And, you know, this guy, a Black guy who used to be a cop, who can easily, you know, sort of basically make himself seem different from the moneyed interests, even though he's so clearly not, is dangerous, man. That's why we always warn against this identity politics shit, because he can claim it. He's like, I'm Black. The cops won't beat my ass. I still want to expand the police. We don't believe in murder. We don't believe in X, Y, and Z. Like, it's so easy to weaponize the identity stuff against the class interests.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to ask you about that because I remember one time you talking with Michael Brooks about this, you know, around the nature of policing, especially, you know, in the context of now, which at the time was not evident, but the context of the crime wave. I remember you talking with Michael Brooks that, like, you know, there's type of cops and there's detectives, you know, like, and that often, like, I think that the rhetoric that came out of the left, I think, spooked a lot of people, including mostly working class people who are the biggest victims of crime, right? Working class people are the biggest victims of crime. Like, very rarely do upper class people suffer the consequences of crime. When they do, it's all over the news, but, you know, but the vast majority of crime is experienced by working class people, and they are not on board with, like, police abolition or even defunding the police. And I think that nuanced point that you were making, which was at the time, like, kind of heretical on the left to suggest that, it's about the type of policing you want. But, like, no one wants, you know, to call the cops and then they not show up when they're feeling, like, attacked or whatever, you know. 100%. Like, people want the cops to solve crimes. The thing is, like, obviously, like, our cops, like, in America have a very bad record of solving crimes, and they're definitely, like, way too violent, you know, for you know, what a civilized society should be. But the nature of the conversation seems to be out of touch with the vast majority of voters.
And I don't think there's enough space to breathe when it comes to the rhetoric on the left. For you always hear the cliche of socially liberal but fiscally conservative, which is just bullshit. But I think working class ethnic people in New York are socially conservative and fiscally liberal. I think they do care about sort of working class economics as it pertains to their own lives, 100%, but do want to see police arrest people who are making, who are doing crimes.
Yeah.
100%. But we don't talk about those people on the left.
Yeah.
Like, those people are icky to us. People who are working class and don't give a fuck about trans people. Not in the sense they want to see trans people die. They don't think about it. That's not what their lives are about. And in fact, they are so removed from the concept of what a trans person is. They don't have smart, woke opinions about trans people. And on the left, they're seen as icky.
Yeah.
Because they don't hold the right views. They don't know how to say LGBTQICUSTSTK. They don't do that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't call people BIPOC. And on the left, they're seen as undesirable. You know, and I think we got to change that. We have to change that.
Yeah, and I think that this is something that, first of all, the what you were describing, socially conservative and fiscally liberal, is probably where the vast majority of people are, period. You know, like, you know, and the vast majority of working class people, which is the vast majority of people. And this is true not just in the United States, but in a lot of countries. You know, the Peruvian elections just happened, and it was won by a guy who was like anti-gay marriage, anti-abortion, anti what he called gender ideology, but was like, you know, nationalizing, wants to nationalize all the mining companies and redistribute funds for the poor. And he won in a very conservative country, like Peru's a country that was been dominated by right wing politics for decades. But I think that what, you know, this is something that I think we talked about with Michael a lot, was when you deal with this kind of thing, it's not about compromising on any meaningful civil right for people, you know, like what you said, like you don't have to like compromise on any single civil right for a trans person.
It's about what you decide to center.
Exactly. You know, it's what you decide to center and how you kind of approach the political messaging around it. And it seems very clear that that centering an you know, a populist kind of appeal to better lives, more secure lives, you know, safer lives, without like sacrificing the political rights of anybody, is the way forward. But the left kind of ties itself into a knot often with that kind of thing. And then we get Eric Adams as the mayor of the biggest city in America. Yeah.
It's crazy. And, you know, and I want to be clear here, because
squeaky doors, clogged sinks, finicky engines. When things break down around the house, you take care of it. However, when something's off in the bedroom, you just try not to think about it. Nothing. I was just tired. I'm just stressed a little bit. Come on, man. What are you waiting for? Take care of it. Go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. With Roman, you can get a free online evaluation and ongoing care for ED, all from the comfort and privacy of your home. A U.S. licensed healthcare professional will work with you to find the best treatment plan. If medication is appropriate, it ships to you free with 2-day shipping. The whole process is straightforward and discreet. Getting started is simple. Just go to GetRoman.com/BOM and complete an online visit. Take care of your ED without leaving your home. Complete an online visit today to connect with a healthcare professional and take care of it. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go to GetRoman.com/BOM now. And if you do, you'll get $15 off your first month. It's really time to take care of your ED. And remember, if you get started today, you'll save $15 on your first order of ED treatment.
Obviously, people know where we stand when it comes to the social, cultural, liberal stuff. Me and Nando are as far out there as anybody you're going to find on that stuff. Nobody could come at my credibility on how much I love the gays and the trans and the gender non-binary. And my credibility is established. But let me tell you something. Parents in a working class neighborhood who own their crib, and there's all kinds of fucking crime happening 2 blocks away from them, and they're raising children, you best believe they don't give a fuck about that social shit you're talking about.
Yeah.
They want their kids to grow up to be upstanding citizens, and they see crime as a problem.
Yeah.
Way bigger than any of these right words, calling somebody a he or she the right way. Period. Period. And the sooner people understand that, the further along we'll be. And again, that's not to say we need to leave people behind. But at the end of the day, whether somebody calls you he or she is not as important as the concerns of parents and their children. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Actual physical safety and harm and crime and schooling and these issues. Those are way more important to people. And by the way, those issues affect way more people in how important they are. And so the sooner motherfuckers realize this shit, the further along we'll be and we can get some fucking shit done. Yeah. Anyway, you know, New York survived Giuliani and Bloomberg. I'm sure this will be fine.
Well, you came to LA. I don't know, man.
That is a great point. And I will say again, it's hard to not see this as a repudiation of the de Blasio regime. I'm sorry. Yeah. He was the freaking liberal savior with his black lesbian wife and all of that stuff. It was great. The libs loved it. They were fucking creaming their pants, and he kind of stunk up the joint. So, you know, do with that what you will. But we move on to greener pastures, my man. Historic primary victory last night in Buffalo, Western New York. It is upstate, it's still upstate, but the proper term is Western New York. Man, this is kind of crazy, man. A black woman, a socialist. And I want to talk about this because when the libs in the Democratic Party establishment talk about diversity, they're not going to talk about this.
No.
They're not going to talk about a black woman, a nurse. No, she ain't go to one of your Ivy Leagues. Yeah. No, she didn't work at Goldman before that. No, she's not from an elite institution. She's a black woman. She's a nurse. Her ideology is socialist. This is diversity, my man.
Yeah.
This is diversity. This is a departure from what y'all always do in y'all fucking group think. This is it. This is what it looks like. Don't just throw in some black general in your fucking administration and tell me, you know, when we killing all these brown people in the Middle East, it's great because it's diverse now. That's bullshit. Bring diversity of thought, diversity of background, diversity of experience up in this motherfucker. This is diversity. And, you know, I got to say, man, I'm pretty excited about this, that this woman, India Walton, could run on basically completely socialist platform and get it done in Buffalo. And like I said at the top of the show, she wins by 7 points, Nando.
Against a fucking incumbent. I mean, it's so hard to beat an incumbent in a primary. Mm-hmm. Imagine if some like person primaried Biden, you know, from the left while he's fucking president, you know?
Or while he was senator in Delaware. That would just
impossible. It's so hard. I think we have a clip of India Walton. I don't know, producer Sean, if you want to throw it up.
Can you please play it for us?
Oh, absolutely. The entire intent of this campaign is to draw down power and resources to the ground level and to the hands of the people. And when we think about socialism, you know, we're perfectly fine with socialism for the rich. We will bail out Wall Street and banks and give $1 billion in tax incentives to one of the richest people in the world to build an empty Tesla factory in South Buffalo. And when it comes to providing the resources that working families need to thrive, socialism becomes scary at that point. So I'm very proud to be a Democratic socialist. I am proud to have the support of Buffalo DSA and National DSA. I received a call from Congresswoman AOC this evening, and I'm just excited to be a part of this movement that is ushering progressive politics into Buffalo. Being the third poorest mid-sized city in this country, we should be considering how we begin to eradicate concentrated poverty and disadvantage, and democratic socialist leanings are a big step in getting us there.
Pretty remarkable stuff, I gotta say. I mean, Buffalo is not like a small town. Buffalo is a city of 250,000 people. You know, they have an NFL team. That means you're like a real city in America. Pretty remarkable. I mean, you know, assuming she wins the mayoralty in the general, which I think is, you know, from what I understand is likely to happen. I think it'll be, she should take a page out of what Bernie Sanders did when he became mayor of Burlington in Vermont, much smaller city, by the way. When Bernie became mayor of Burlington, he hyper-focused on basically like good government, you know, like the shit that like any mayor is supposed to do, no matter what they are, like cleaning the roads,
potholes, or, you know, all of that,
the potholes and trash and all that shit. Like, you gotta have that like buttoned up. Like, you gotta be perfect at all that shit, you know, because if you are, history shows that mayors that are like good at that basic shit will win forever. Like, they'll be rewarded by the voters, no matter what, if they have like, once they're in there, if they have like all the real estate interests against them, all that shit, like as long as they like keep that shit in line, that's a huge source of their power. And I think, like, you know, obviously like AOC winning, she's a DSA member and becoming one of the most high profile members of the House is like pretty remarkable. But I think it's different to be a congressperson than to be a mayor, where you have executive power. Yeah. You have like shit that you have to be doing every day, you know, to actually run a government. You know, when you're in Congress, you're like voting on some shit and, you know, like you do a lot of media and stuff, but like you're not running your district. You know, that's not what you do. You represent your district in Washington, but you're not like making sure the streets of Queens or whatever are clean, mm-hmm. you know? And so that effect that you can have on people's lives in a day-to-day, the management of a day-to-day city, especially a large one like Buffalo, that's a whole different thing. Like, if she can do a good job as mayor, you know, it seems like her political prospects to me are immense, because just that executive experience, like, voters reward that shit, whether you're governor, mayor, or even president, you know, like, and history shows that the people who become president tend to come from executive offices. Not always, like Biden was a senator his whole life. It's not like, but throughout history, the people who tend to become presidents are usually governors.
Oh, yeah. Freaking Clinton, Reagan. Clinton. You keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. So, interesting victory.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie. I got pretty emotional watching that video because, you know, she got up there and was like, I'm not scared to tell you what I'm here to do. I'm here to help the people at the bottom. All y'all elites could feel how you want to feel. It's about power to the people. And, you know, as look, man, 250,000 people population city is nothing to sneeze at. This is a major American city. And this woman won talking the talk of socialism and progressive politics. And, you know, she seems to be pretty charismatic and has her eye on the ball. And, you know, this is a pretty dope victory. It's, again, we say this all the time on here. It's not always that we have good news to share, but we got to celebrate our victories when they happen so that Absolutely. We can build upon them going forward. So, again, shouts to India Walton, historic victory last night.
Yeah.
And as I said, we have to move on to some bullshit. And, you know, yesterday the Republicans blocked debate on the John Lewis bill. Blocked debate. Mm. Okay. Joe Manchin told his billionaire sugar daddies while he was shaking his ass for him that we got to get some bipartisan stuff. He goes, bipartisan. The amount of times this motherfucker said bipartisan on that damn Zoom call, like, if I had a nickel, I'd be fucking on that Zoom call because I'd be a billionaire. And, you know, again, the Republicans said, suck a dick. Take your bipartisanship and shove it. We're not even having a debate on this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they used the filibuster to kill the voting rights bill, which, again, like, is not like, you know,
this is what they're gonna do. to everything.
Of course. Of course. So, but I mean, like, what's frustrating about this, first of all, is, you know, I get like so tired of the Democrats, you know, hysterical hair on fire shit about, like, you know, the Republicans are going to like eliminate voting in this country, which they're like kind of right about. Like, the Republicans are introducing like hundreds of bills in state legislatures all over the country to restrict the franchise as much as possible. And it's like, okay, well, stop fucking yelling about it. What are you going to do about it? And the answer is nothing. They're going to do nothing. Nothing. Like, literally nothing. I mean, this is what's like drives me crazy about this kind of liberalism, is that they are obsessed with process rather than the actual exercise of power. You know, like, they don't like to do it if it means that they have to actually kind of vocally use power. The one time they did it was, which was to ram through this, the $2 trillion stimulus. Poll after poll after poll shows that it was remarkably powerful.
Yeah.
Remarkably popular. No one gave a shit that it was passed through budget reconciliation and that not a single Republican voted for it. Like, no one fucking gave a shit. You know, like, what they get? They got money in my pocket. Okay, great. Fucking do more of that, you know? Like, but the Democrats are obsessed with process. They think like, oh, if we don't like, if we don't do this in a bipartisan way, then, you know, people are going to be mad at us. You know, the referee in the sky that referees this kind of thing is going to be mad at us, and he's going to blow the whistle and he's going to call a penalty. And it's like, that's just not how it works, man.
It's not how this works, bro.
And, you know, it seems like Biden's agenda, which is being completely stalled. Like, if that is, if this is the status quo, like, if this is going to be the next year and a half, the Democrats will lose the Congress and Senate in 2022. And then we're just going to have two more years of Biden with a Republican Senate in which nothing is going to happen. Imagine Biden dealing with a fucking Republican Senate, like, literally nothing, not even like the reconciliation stuff that he wants to do. So it's just incredibly frustrating, because the feeling that you get when you talk to some of these liberals about it and you're like, well, why don't you do something about it? And they're like, well, we can't do anything. We can't do anything. There's nothing we can do. It's Manchin and Sinema. What are they going to do? We can't, like, you know, what are we gonna do? And it's like,
it's called, bro, political pressure.
Yes,
it's like called getting in his ass. It's called, can we talk about Joe Manchin's daughter running some freaking pharmaceutical company with dubious credentials, making serious dough, and falsifying a college transcript? Are we we can start talking about Joe Manchin's life and making him a little bit more miserable, because right now he just gets to gloat like he's some beacon of political civics and process orientation. I am so process oriented. I'm so high-minded. You might as well call me fucking Plato. It's like, get the fuck out of here, bruh. You've been a corporatist Dem from the fucking start, and that's all you care about.
Listen, look at what they do to Ilhan Omar when she says something like, you know, Palestinians deserve human rights.
Are humans.
And like, just the entire machinery of the Democratic Party just fucking, you know, like, coming on top of her and just like, you know, that kind of pressure. Funding her political opponents in primaries and all that shit. Like, well, Manchin, like, there's just nothing. They don't do anything. And, like, this is not, like, just us talking. Like, there's been reporting coming out from the White House that Biden keeps telling, like, rights advocates and shit like that, voting rights advocates, not to pressure Manchin, you know, like, not to do it. And it's just, it's remarkable, because, like, the difference between the rhetoric that comes from them and their actual actions is just, like, night and day. It's fucking night and day. So, I don't know, man. Like, I like,
vote blue no matter who, Nando.
Vote blue no matter who. Like, the Biden administration, which started out, you know, which seemingly a willingness to break with some of the orthodoxies of the past with a large stimulus. It's just been like, that was like a brief flash in the pan. Now we're just like stuck in same old shit, like the same old shit, like just desperately trying to get Republicans to vote on your shit, which they never will do. They never will do. You know, so the only choice is like, do we concentrate everything on ending the filibuster or not? Because everything else is just fucking immaterial. You know, it's just, they're not even going to vote for like this awful infrastructure bill, which is like basically just a giant handout to private corporations and in order to like win over Republicans. They're not even going to get that. So, yeah.
As the world turns, the Dems continue to suck fat dick. thanks for nothing, Joe Manchin and Kristen Sinema. But we move on to better things. Yeah. Talk to us about Euro Cup, what you've seen, who's impressed, who's disappointed. Man. I can't lie. I haven't watched much of it. I caught the tail end of that Sweden match and that sweet, sweet goal in stoppage time. Talk to me, Nando, about what you've seen so far.
Well, I'm actually watching right now as we record this, the Portugal-France. Like, it looks like I'm paying attention and making smart points, but really I'm just watching Portugal-France on my computer. You can probably see it in the glare of my eyeballs. Benzema has two goals. My boy Benzema, my favorite player in the world.
He's looking good.
Yeah. He just scored two goals against Portugal.
He blackmailed his teammate. That was messed up.
He didn't blackmail his teammate. His friends blackmailed his teammate. It wasn't him. Yeah, it wasn't. He had his Benzema grew up like in the hood, you know, like in Marseille as like an Algerian son of Algerian immigrants, you know, like, you know, some rough,
they don't treat you know, some rough well out in France. Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and you know, like his teammate was like this, like white boy, you know, Valbuena, you know. And anyway, we don't have to get into that. But
you're the first person in all of media to bring a cape for Karim Benzema, bro. I've never seen it, but I love it.
I can make a whole thing. We should do a special emergency pod when we break down like the ins and outs. I think like the tournament's been a lot of fun, man. I mean, I didn't have high hopes of it because it was coming off the back of this kind of like weird COVID season, and I got the sense that the players were going to be like all exhausted, and there's probably evidence to that, but the level of play has been great. I mean, it's been a lot of fun, great goals, great games. I mean, there's been a new format this year. They expanded the amount of teams dramatically, and I don't know if that has an effect on the level of play. It has had an effect where it like lowers the stakes of a lot of the games in the group stage. Like, you know, very few teams are going to get eliminated from the group stage. Although Germany, who is losing right now,
you know what I hate? After a long day of work, dealing with people, being stressed, got to figure out what to eat that night. I don't feel like cooking, but I don't want to eat something that's bad for me, like junk food. I want something healthy. I want to eat something that tastes good, and I don't want to work too hard or pay too much to do it. Well, guess what? What you really want, if you're like me, is Freshly. That's right. Freshly offers chef-made, nutrient-packed, delicious meals delivered fresh to your door. No cooking required. Grocery shopping and cooking can be a pain, especially right now. And with Freshly, you don't have to. Your meals arrive cooked and fresh every week, so you can keep your fridge stocked and skip the trip to the store. Ordering is easy. All you got to do is visit Freshly.com and choose from over 30 delicious, satisfying, better-for-you meals like steak peppercorn, sausage baked penne, or their chicken pesto bowl. I love the chicken pesto bowl! Freshly can fit your lifestyle with a variety of plans and meals to pick from that work for your dietary needs, preferences, tastes, and family size. Now our listeners can try Freshly for just $6.16 per meal. Stop searching the internet for healthy food near me every night and start living life Freshly. Your meals are always delivered fresh, never frozen, and are ready to heat and enjoy in just 3 minutes. With new meals added each week, Freshly brings the convenience of chef-made, nutritionist-designed classics right to your kitchen. Right now, Freshly is offering our listeners $40 off your first two orders when you go to freshly.com/BOM. Stop stressing about dinner. Go to freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. That's freshly.com/BOM for $40 off your first two orders. Do yourself a favor. Get Freshly.
Might get eliminated in the group stage.
That's a big deal.
Yeah. I think that the you know, the heavy favorite going into it is France, because they're just like absolutely stacked at every position. But they you know, they're, I mean, obviously, like, it's hard to like criticize a coach who won the World Cup in 2 years ago. But his style of play is so conservative that it just feels like they don't really exploit all of their mm-hmm. their incredible talent. The team that's been playing like unbelievably well and has kind of sneaked in, because not a lot of people had them as one of the favorites, is Italy. You know, Italy, which is like a, you know, probably after Germany, the historically the most powerful European team. You know, the Germans are the second, you know, most powerful team in world soccer after Brazil traditionally. But right below that is Italy. And, you know, they fell on hard times a little bit in the last kind of decade or so. But they're playing fucking great. I mean, they have a very smooth style of play. They, you know, they're like a well-oiled machine right now, even though they don't have great stars up front. I mean, you know, Lorenzo Insigne is a nice player, but they don't have like major stars the way France does, or the way England does, or even Germany. Or so yeah, it's been a lot of fun. I like Italy. I mean, my team Spain has been disappointing, although I didn't have high hopes for them. I mean, they play really well in midfield, but they don't have great players in defense or at forward. I mean, Morata has just been, he's had an absolute nightmare.
It's interesting to watch them right now, Nando, because I sort of became a global soccer fan during that Greatest Generation run,
yeah,
where they were just insane.
Yeah.
And it's like, this team ain't
unplayable.
That.
No, it ain't that. I mean, that team, those teams that won, you know, which no team has ever done before, they won a Euro mm-hmm. Cup, a World Cup, and then a Euro Cup, three in a row. Mm-hmm. No one's ever done that. That team, those teams were like stacked at every single position. I mean, they had just like top five in their position at every position, right?
Position.
And so it was kind of like normal that they dominated so much. Right now, Spain doesn't have top five in their position at any position, really. You know, I mean, maybe you can make maybe an argument for Busquets, who, you know, got COVID right before the tournament, so he missed the first two games. But I mean, maybe an argument for Busquets. I mean, I'm a big fan of Busquets in general, but he's the only guy who you can say is truly like world class at his position. All the other guys are like nice players, but no one like truly great. So yeah, Spain has struggled, although they won 5-0 today. Hopefully that gives them confidence going into the second round. But yeah, I mean, the story, the Denmark story has been amazing. I mean, you know, Christian Eriksen, hopefully he recovers. I mean, he had a basically like a stroke or a heart attack in the opening game.
Yeah, that was crazy.
He may never play again, but clearly rallied them, and they've played like some amazing soccer. I mean, they're one of like the sort of Cinderella teams, I would say.
So, no, what I wanted to ask you, Nando, who to your mind has been the best player, individual player in the tournament so far?
Best individual player. Good question. I think Ronaldo, I mean, Ronaldo has four goals so far.
Wow.
He's been good. I mean, two of them are penalties.
He's still doing that is crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. All-time leading scorer in Euro Cups and World Cups combined. But he, you know, he's got four goals, two penalties.
Messi fans.
Yeah. But he, I don't think he's been the best player.
No.
Let me try and think. Who's really kind of like lit it up? I mean,
who have you personally enjoyed watching the most where you're like, wow, that guy's electric right now?
I really liked the way, the Netherlands have played. And they have a guy named Frankie de Jong who's just, I think, playing incredibly well right now. I mean, he kind of makes everything tick. They're kind of like a sneaky team that could win it. I mean, they have three guys that are just playing really well right now: de Jong, Wijnaldum, who scored two goals the other day, and Memphis Depay, who just signed for Barcelona on a free transfer. They're looking really, really good. The French team, I mean, I got to say, like, watching Mbappe play for France, his growth as a player, I mean, he won the World Cup in 2018. He was already there, but he was, at the time he was so young, he still was kind of a
just raw.
Raw, yeah. He had so much talent and like in unbelievable speed. I mean, watching him at full flight is crazy.
Watching him separate from people is like nothing insane. I've ever seen before.
Insane. And he does this thing. I mean, I think since then he's grown so much as a player that, like, even though France haven't, like, you know, blown the socks off anyone yet, watching him as such a more mature player, such a more well-rounded player, like the goal that they, you know, they went down against Hungary and, you know, we got pretty hairy there for a second. And they scored a goal to tie it through Antoine Griezmann. But Mbappe's play on that goal, I mean, he's standing still in the box with a defender in front of him. And then he just beats him off the dribble with speed and puts in a cross for Griezmann to score. Like, just being able to beat a guy from when you're both standing still, it's so hard to do these days. You know, like, defenders have just gotten better. Like, defending has gotten better, and few players can just do that, you know, like, anymore. Very, very rare. You know, both guys just standing there, and it's like me against you. Who's going to fucking, you know, like, the attacker in that situation has, like, all the disadvantages in the world. And he just, like, created the space, put the cross in, and they scored. And that's just, like, that kind of thing is so hard. So I think Mbappe, I just think his growth has been incredible. And if they can kind of make that work with Benzema, and it looks like it's starting to work a little bit better. I mean, their potential is just incredible. So I think, by the way,
you know who gives me the opposite feeling of watching Mbappe? Pogba. I'm perpetually disappointed by that dude.
He just put in a great assist to Benzema, but for their second goal. But, like, I agree with you. Pogba is a very strange player to me. Just wildly inconsistent in the run of a game. You know, like, I'm not talking about, like, you know, through a season, like, in the middle of the game, like, he'll do something and you're like, oh my God, that's incredible. And then he'll do some shit where you're like, what are you doing, man? Terrible. It's crazy. Like, he doesn't have the ball, all kinds of shit, man. Yeah. And it's weird because he has, like, all the tools, right? He should be dominant. Yeah. He should be an utterly dominant player, but he just never quite does it. He never quite imposes the way he could. It's very, Portugal just tied it through another penalty by Cristiano Ronaldo. So now he has five goals in the tournament, which is like a lot for a whole tournament. Like, if usually like the top scorer in this one of these tournaments, has five, six goals.
Yeah.
This is group stage. So, I mean, three of them are penalties to be fair, but still, 2-2. Wow. What a game. I've been loving the Euro Cup, man. I've been fucking loving it.
Yeah, it's great to have something to watch during the day, because I'm not going to lie, my TV doesn't come on during the day. I'm on my computer, I'm doing shit, whatever, and I don't even bother with the TV during the day. It's nice to be able to turn this thing on and have something entertaining to watch. I love that the fans are back, the chanting is back. Yeah. Thankfully, nobody's thrown any banana peels at any black dudes yet, so it's all going fantastic.
There's been a couple incidents in Hungary, apparently. Apparently in the France game, you know, Hungary, Viktor Orban, you know that whole story. Like, they have, like, they've took a pretty fascist-y turn. Apparently against France, you know, which the French team is, like, heavily African, right? Like, I mean, just heavily African descent. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's, like, three white guys on the team. Which is always, like, a flashpoint in Europe.
It happens.
It's fucking Hungary. It's fucking Hungarians.
Anyway, we'll be keeping up with the Euros. Please make sure you check out every single other Count the Dings offering: Cinephobe, the Friday Mailbag, the OG show on Monday that producer Sean has been freaking killing it on.
Yeah.
Shouts to everybody that's a Patreon. Please become a Patreon if you can. Patreon.com/Count the Dings. That's how we bring you all this amazing content. We'll see you guys next week. We're out of here.
Later.